somebody give me a bucket and my umbrella. I think it's raining in the studio. We went from flat-out punk rock to straight-up heavy metal. That song was called Electric Scar from Foundry Road, submitted to us from Irk over at Insomnia Radio Australia. He says Electric Scar is one of the few work-safe Foundry Road songs that he can actually feature on a podcast. It's a great example of the band's capabilities, and make no mistake, Foundry Road are pure metal. They aren't simply putting the word metal as a keyboard to get more downloads. You know, they're truly metal. They're an Australian metal band, and they go hard live or in the studio. They're located near Irk in the outskirts of Western Sydney. He's featured the band on episode 7 of Insomnia Radio Australia, as well as on episode 106 of Irk.fm. A couple of louder and not safe for work songs have just appeared on Irk FM 111 as part of Irk's month-long Rocktober celebration. Find Foundry Road on MySpace under Foundry Road. And, of course, find Insomnia Radio Australia. Here, let me get you the web address for that, because I got to look this one up. It shouldn't be that tough. Australia.insomniaradio.net. See? I told you it was simple.
You're listening to a feed of the Association of Music Podcasting at musicpodcasting.org.
In 2009, Irk went to the dark side and became a music podcaster. He discovered a wide, wide selection of music. Apart from Dozy Do by Julie the Band, it's now 2010 and Irk comes down the pipe and into your ears. Bigger, stronger and faster. Every Friday, it's Irk FM time. Now here's your host of Irk FM from Channel Irk, here's Irk.
G'day, I'm Irk, and welcome to Irk FM. Irk FM, of course, is my independent and unsigned music podcast. It is a part of Channel Irk, channelirk.com, and this is really strange for me because normally I do most of my interviews via Skype, but on this occasion I am sitting around a kitchen table, which sort of brings me back to the old Irk Pod roundtable days, because I am here with all of the members of Foundry Road.
Hello.
Out!
Come on, you two guitar guys. You must have something to add.
Ow.
Hello.
So why don't we introduce ourselves and say hi, and
I'm Brad, drummer of Foundry Road. Basically put this band together.
Cue massive after from rest of band.
I'm explain.
That's it.
Hello, I'm Scott, the guitarist for Foundry Road, and pretty much the glue of the band.
Your name is Simon. Can I play Simon bass?
Simon at home.
My name is Simon. I play bass guitar in Foundry Road.
Hi, Simon. So, who wants to tell us the history of Foundry Road? When did you guys form?
I'll explain.
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 I'll explain.
Please.
We started off about, probably about 4 years ago, together as Foundry Road. No, we were Chaos Trigger back then. Before that, Brad was in this huge lineup of different people that was occasionally called a band.
There was a chosen few. Then we became Chaos Trigger. I think that was it.
Yeah, I think I joined the band when Chaos Trigger first. Yeah. We started jamming. You lost your bass player, then I joined.
Yeah, that's right.
And then that became Chaos Trigger. And then once our former two guitarists left, then that became Foundry Road.
And, but before all that, the first time I ever saw Brad play drums, that was Project Offenham. That was a long time ago, like almost 8 years.
Wow, that's right.
Didn't
you
get the worst name in metal?
Yeah.
Won the award for worst name in metal.
Yeah.
So who would you have been up against for that name? Do you remember any of the other acts?
I don't know. There was some URL on the internet somewhere that, yeah, we got rated one of the worst band names ever. Circa 2002. Project Offenham. Yeah, it was terrible. Thank you, Eden.
And so, why Foundry Road? What's the how did the name come about?
Originally, it kind of started off with just Foundry, which I actually picked up from an old boss of mine. I was just chatting to him about my new metal band that I was in. Told him it was called Chaos Trigger, so he took it upon himself to try and come up with a new name for the band, which at that time we had no desire to change it. And then it was probably like 2 years afterwards, like I'd originally presented this idea to the guys and they were like, yeah, and it just went nowhere. And then about 2 years later, we actually started having strong thoughts about changing the band name from Chaos Trigger. We just thought a change was needed and a new name would better suit us. So I brought this Foundry idea back to the band. You know, as everyone knows, Foundry being a place metal is made. We make pretty decent metal. So a few ideas came about. One of the first ideas was actually Elmira Foundry.
Elmira Foundry was the worst safety, or had the worst safety record of any foundry in the world.
The three guys here, Explain, Brad and Simon, were pretty fond of the Elmira Foundry idea, and it was actually myself that ended up going against it just for the sole fact that it was based in New York. But eventually we came down Foundry Road.
We got the name Foundry Road. we come up with the name Foundry Road because Scott's boss virtually said that we should change our band because Chaos Trigger sucked. And we were toying around with a few different names, and Foundry kept hitting back since Foundry's the place where metal is made. And as I was driving down the road when I did have a license and it was not chewed up by police, since I did lead him on a 10 cop car chase 3 weeks later, I drove past a road called Foundry Road and gave us the idea of the journey of metal. That's why we named it that.
Awesome. So while you've got the mic, Mr. Explain, why don't you tell us how you got started into music in the first place?
It's quite easy. I scream for the band. I do an occasional singing, but I just basically scream. The best way I can sort of explain what I do is what you missed there was me stepping on Brad's foot. If you can imagine all the pain and sadness of any part of your day, and you feel that person inside you where you just want to kill someone, you just want to scream at someone. There's not one person in the world that would not love to beat the shit out of someone they hate. Well, I'm that guy. I bring that out through my voice.
And how do you prepare? You must have strong vocal cords.
Beer. Cigarette. Last year, I had two tumours removed from my throat.
During the recording process?
Yeah, it was during the recording process. Basically, that was preparation enough.
And before we go to the other guys, how did you get the name Explained, and how come the rest of the guys don't have cool names?
Simply because there's no way to explain me.
Cool. What about you, Simon? How did you get started into the music game?
Well, I don't know. I guess it started off with my brother used to play guitar a lot. And I just kind of, you know, really wanted... I saw him play lots of guitar, so I kind of got into it from that. And then it just kind of progressed over probably about 11 years, maybe 12 years, probably more now. And yeah, and then I started playing in a bunch of bands when I was in high school. And then from that, I was mostly punk bands during high school. And then after that, it kind of grew into a big fascination with metal. I met Scott during high school, and I think he got a little bit inspired by me playing guitar, and then he kind of grew up that way as well. And then we didn't really play in a band until now, really. We had a lot of riffs together, or we kind of had like a project, I guess you could call it.
The last few weeks.
Yeah, about that, yeah. I think we wrote like two songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and fastest two songs you've ever written.
Yeah.
And yeah, and that's it. And then like when I said like I joined the band after Brad's band Project Offenham was looking for a bass player through a friend of a friend, and then we became Chaos Trigger, and you know, the rest you know.
Awesome. You might as well take up the story.
All right, so I originally got into music, well, particularly heavy metal, from my older brother. Kind of growing up in a broken family, like brother was away from home quite a bit, and then just, I don't know, I was about 12 or 13, and he kind of moved back home for a little bit and brought some Pantera and Metallica albums home with him. At first, like, at this time, I won't even admit to what I was listening to. But...
Boys to Men!
Do we have a winner, do we? Boys to Men?
Damn! Yeah, so he brought these albums home. Like, one in particular was, at the time, Great Southern Tranquil, Pantera. If you heard this album, it starts off with Phil Anselmo screaming his lungs out for about 20 seconds, which at that time of my, you know, listening to metal, did not appeal one bit. But then it was just songs like One and This Love and Cemetery Gates and stuff like that, just the ballads and all that type of thing that kind of propelled me onto liking metal. And then from there, had the want to play guitar. And at this time, I was at high school with Simon here and started playing guitar. We just fed off each other, and I don't know, myself, I just felt I've had a connection with Simon, writing music and all that type of thing. So yeah, just built on it, and it took too long. It was about 10 years before me and Simon actually got to be in a band together, but
like a good wine.
Yeah, eventually happened, and this is it.
Awesome. What about you, Brad?
Which part of that do you want me to take up?
Your part of the story, mate.
All right, my part. As has been discussed, I was going through many bands. All started out with a band called The Chosen Few, which included my mates, another Scott on guitar, and Jeff on bass. We wrote some very bad songs to start out with, very basic structure, very bad riffs. But from there, people came, people went. We had bassists come and go, we had guitarists come and go. And for the last 2-3 years, the lineup has been structured and solid, which I've been thanking whichever deity you might, you know, worship. But yeah, now that I'm in a solid lineup with these guys, and we've got the album out there, and I'm loving it. Looking forward to writing some new tracks. That brings us up to now.
Awesome. Now explain. You know that you've been some of the material on my mum's podcast that mum and I do together, the Bias from the Past podcast, with the face makeup. So tell her, what's the story with the face makeup?
Well, she thinks I'm trying to copy, who was it?
Alice Cooper.
It started off as Alice Cooper, and then we remembered she was talking about Gene Simmons.
That's right. Yeah. Well, the face paint actually came about. The first run of the face paint looked very similar to the Joker from Dark Knight. And I just loved Heath Ledger's character in that. The way he acted on screen was just one of the best things I've ever seen.
Yep.
I loved his personality in it too. It was sort of crossed with Two-Face, because I had some teeth drawn up the side of me as well. And I got sick of doing the same thing and people saying, oh, you look like the Joker. So I just changed it up a little bit. I thought it'd be really freaky to throw a red handprint on my face. It looks like I've been killing more people. Other than that, it's just simply a part of who Explain is. It's he's not a normal guy.
No, that's cool, because when I went and saw you guys over at the Hawkesbury Hotel, there was you and then there were other people with face paint on, and I'm thinking, you know, other members of the band. And, you know, of course, I knew Brad before that, but, you know, who knows, he was going to duck out and get some on himself. And then I only saw you with the face paint on. I'm thinking, well, you know, is that other people catching on and, you know, worshipping, explain, so to speak?
Ah, worshipping. Well, you all should be doing that anyway. Those two people in the crowd, one was a friend of mine. He was just really drunk and wanted his face painted. The other guy just saw me with the face paint on and asked if he could have some. So I started painting his face, and apparently he's part Maori, so we threw some Maori tribal designs on his face too, so he was half explain, half Maori.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. Yeah. It showed that this, the whole face paint thing is doing what is intended, and that's to get people's attention.
Awesome. So let's go into the singing, songwriting, the nerdy stuff, the meat and potatoes of the stuff that I like. Who's responsible for the singing, and the, or not so much the singing, because we all know Explain does the singing. Who's responsible for the songwriting?
We all are. It basically starts off with Scotty or Simo with a riff most of the time. They'll bring it to us, and Brad will put down a drum track. We all discuss every part of it together. We are a team. It's never one way, like my way, and that's it. I usually wait until the end before I write the actual lyrics for the song. I'll set up structures and set up what the songs could be about, but when it comes to actually writing the lyrics, I'll wait until pretty much the whole structure's done.
So to answer already, because you've just answered the question that I usually have, in your case, it's usually music first, lyrics later.
Yeah, well, I've got plenty of lyrics at home that I would love to bring to the band. I'm telling you, I've got hundreds of pages of songs just sitting at home, and I would love to bring it to the band. It's just a matter of finding what sounds suit these lyrics, since that the music is done first. We do have one song. Well, I do have one song in mind. I've already written the lyrics and the structure. It's a matter of fitting these guys around it. But as I said, it's teamwork. So we can't simply just say, all right, this is how it goes.
Sometimes I think it's probably our style. Although I don't know many bands that would write a lyrics first and try to put a music around it. That seems to kind of be too extremely hard. Unless it's pop. Yeah. Well, pop is the exception, of course, but. What I mean is, though, like, I mean, okay, well, I'm talking metal here, so...
Continue, sorry. Thanks for having the flow.
Yeah, so like I was saying, that I think it's a good structure that we have. The fact that me and Scotty get time to kind of work on riffs, it's... Sometimes I think we find it hard sometimes when we're in a whole band aspect to sit there and write, because not a lot of us can, like, kind of gel a lot. It's not until we've probably made maybe half the song or three quarters of the song that... We tend to just polish it off a little bit, and that's the way it usually works. Like, we come up with like six, maybe seven riffs, bring them together, twist and contort them until it comes out the way we.
Yeah, so just to elaborate a little bit more about our writing style and how it's all put together, as the previous guys have laid out, that you know, it's essentially starting off with a few riffs that me and Simon will come up with. Try to come down with a basic structure for the song, you know, like work out what we want, what sounds good for the verse, what sounds good for the chorus, and that type of thing. We'll have a few other ideas to work with. Then we proceed to take this to the rest of the band, and this is just where it just gets pulled to shreds, put back together like countless amount of times until we're comfortable and think it's good enough to show to you guys.
Brad, got anything to add to that, mate?
I play drums.
Really well.
When Brad comes into the mix of from guitar and bass, and we throw in some drums, the song, that's when you start feeling there's a song happening. It's not a couple of riffs now and trying to work out a structure. As soon as Brad sits down behind that kit and starts playing to these riffs, that's when we start hearing a song and
start to bring the feel out to
yep.
it a lot. Yeah. Because like sometimes me and Scotty can't picture exactly what it actually sounds like with drums. We have a fair idea, but it's nothing to do with the feel. Like sometimes we might extend like riffs that we thought, oh, they sound good short, and they end up being longer. I mean, one good example is Hide and Seek and Psyphobia, one of the two tracks on the albums, was actually originally, they were one and the same, some riffs in some parts of it, but we actually decided to split them up and put them in two different songs, and that kind of came out through the jamming process, more than likely, yeah.
So, Brad, as a drummer in a metal band, how important is the drummer when it comes to a metal band?
I think the drummer adds a lot of dynamic to the song. A lot of metal songs can be, it can vary from just your basic chug, and the rest of the band needs to kind of provide that variance and dynamic to the song. And in other cases, the guitar riffs can be very, very intricate, very structured. And the drummer needs to follow very closely to what's happening with the guitars and bass. And I like to add my little fills and nuances here and there. That if you ever listen to the album, you'll probably hear that I'm very, very double bass heavy, especially with the 16th beat kicks and stuff like that. So yeah, I think, but, you know, a drummer in a metal band, you need to be vibrant, you need to be dynamic, you need to keep in mind that you need to play with the rest of the band, add to the sound, and make sure that the audience doesn't get bored, pretty much.
And so with a lot of other bands live, we're finding out that the first person to go is the drummer. That's obviously not going to happen with a metal band.
Well, in this instance, I've been the stable member in this band. I've been here 6 or 7 years in various bands.
It's the same band, just changed all the way through. Like yeah.
Perfected. It's been me. It's been me on drums through 3 or 4 bands. So, yeah, I'm joined by these talented and great musicians, and they've provided stability to the lineup for the last few years, and, yeah, I thank them very much.
So I'm going to ask you the question that I ask all my artists. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. You've got a really good idea for a song, lyric, a riff, a drum beat, whatever you want to call it, and you're asleep. What do you do when you get to 3 a.m. and you have a really great idea?
I reach over to the nearest pen, paper. Lately, it's been the iPhone. But I can tell you what I do when I don't have a really good idea at 3 a.m. in the morning and I really want one at 3 a.m. in the morning. I go and take a poo. I'm serious.
Wow.
I'm serious. If anyone ever got writer's block, go to the toilet, make sure you got your pen and paper or your iPhone with you, and I can guarantee you all your bad ideas come out one end and all your good ideas come in the other. See, oh, gee, that's how I wrote Hide and Seek.
As long as you get the balance right, yeah.
I was pooping while I wrote most of Hide and Seek. There you go.
I guess I'll never hear that answer again.
It'd be good to play that song right now.
That's a crap song.
I must say, a lot of inspiration comes out while on the toilet. You just you get time to sit and think, so to speak.
Yeah, just imagine it. Like, if you're sitting in imagine it right now. If you're sitting in a cubicle somewhere in Sydney, trying to mind your own business, you know, do your thing, and you hear some tapping going on next to you, that's Brad.
Brad's doing a drum beat, is he?
In a cubicle near you.
On the toilet, apparently.
I try beating that one.
How do you follow that up?
Yeah, follow that up, bitch.
Where was I going to go from here? Where can I go from here? So what sort of preparation do you guys put in to a performance?
Beer helps in preparation, very much.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Speaking of beer. Okay, like, ever since the album has been done, which we completed at the end of July, I've got myself into a bit of a routine just to try and get myself prepared for a show to make sure my fingers are all limbered up and ready to go. But based on my last performance, unfortunately I was running a little late to the show. My practice sessions to, you know, make sure that I do play well didn't quite work out. The fact that B was mentioned... Because I was late, I didn't get beer. So that is the problem. That is the problem.
No beer.
No beer. Because I practiced before I got to the show, which was why I was kind of late. But
so when it comes down to it, Scott's actually a really badly alcoholic. So if he doesn't drink, he can't perform. And that's not just in a band.
My preparation, I hum a lot just with my mouth.
Yep.
My preparation, I drink a lot of water. I have to make sure I drink liters of water before I get up on stage, otherwise my throat just dries out. The moment I drink too much beer or anything before a gig, I just dry up and I don't sound as good by the end of it. But yeah, the whole water thing, I've learnt that over the last couple of weeks, last couple of gigs, that if I don't drink at least 3 liters of water before I go on stage, I pass out. And I've done that the last two gigs. I had the Blacktown gig, Blacktown Basement, blacked out right at the end of the set, just totally exhausted. That was due to a hangover from the big night I had before. And the last gig we had at Tempe at the Valve Bar, right at the end there, I felt like I was almost about to black out, and that was simply because of the amount of stress I was under through the week before. Yeah, so I prepared by drinking lots of water, warming up the vocal cords, and drinking not too much beer, but just enough to make me feel relaxed.
So are you sore afterwards?
No, it doesn't hurt afterwards. It just gets huskier. As long as I've drunk enough water and not too much beer, it's fine. I watched the DVD Zen of Screaming. That helped a lot with the preparation, like breathing exercises, all that sort of crap that you're supposed to do that, yeah, I really should and don't. But... yeah, if you keep all that up, you should be able to hold at least an hour and a half set, where we're only doing 45 minutes max.
What about you, Brad?
I've been getting to the end of the gig and really been wanting more, actually. I like to get to a gig no minimum than an hour and a half before, you know, the doors even open, pretty much. Just to let my drums climatize to the place and whatever. What?
The drums are lying! They're lying!
Oh, it's warm in here. I better stay here a bit longer. I couldn't help it. That was
awful. I'm perspiring.
I let my drums acclimatise to the venue. It's best for the skins if it actually, you know, gets to the same room temperature. Drums don't come out of tune if you let it do that. And so, yeah, as I said, like, I get to the end of the gig and I'm just wanting for more, pretty much. The first few gigs, the first few songs of a gig, I'll be a bit, a bit cool. Yeah, a bit cold. A bit reserved, that's right. Yeah, a bit reserved. Middle of the set, I'll be on, you know, all cylinders. And then towards the end, I'm just firing and ready for anything. You know, when we get to the end of our 40-minute set, I'm just like, I want to play some more now.
Can I just say, if anyone gets the opportunity to step where Brad has been playing for the last 45 minutes, I can guarantee you will need gumboots.
All those shoes that you trek through the snow with.
Yeah, Brad's nickname is Puddles, and it's that for a reason. When this guy drums, like when this guy sets up his kit, by the time he's finished, he's already sweating like an Englishman in the sun. By the time that he's finished his set, he has left a pool of sweat. Hence why I fell down at the last couple of gigs, because I didn't really pass out. I just slipped over on his sweat. Sweat.
So let's talk about the album. It sounded to me very live. It sounded to me as if yous were all together at the same time. I know that other bands, they might lay their tracks separately. It just sounded to me like you were all together at the one time.
Actually, that couldn't be further from the truth. We tracked everything, basically bass and drums first thing, with Scotty in the the engineering room, laying down the guides for the drums, and then we built everything up from there.
I think one of the main reasons why you might think it's a live recording is a sense that we worked it over almost a period of a year.
Yep.
So we would go in, say, one night and do, say, Bad would go in and do 2-3 drum tracks. And then from the next few weeks on, we would work on bass, then guitars, then vocals to kind of get those songs to a certain level. And then, say, after that, then Brad would go and do drums again. So sometimes the sounds can vary a little bit.
Yep.
In a sense like that. And that's what you may hear in the record sometimes.
The other reason for that is because we are a live band. Like, we are four men.
Yeah.
And with the way we recorded, we basically played the songs through. And, of course, there were edits and stuff that everyone else knows how to do. But we didn't use machines to replicate sounds. We didn't use a trigger for the kit. We used everything from, like, with microphones. It was there, done.
Yep.
Shut up. Yeah, every track was tracked from someone playing those songs, and it was not done with any sort of machine help. I think the closest thing that we came to that was like guitar effects, like effects pedals, you know, some effects on my voice. I mean, that's as close as you come to editing the way we sound.
Yeah.
Let's just say the recording process was an experience for all of us. I don't think any of us have had actually tried to stick in there and actually record at least 9 tracks and got in there for a studio for that amount of time. It almost felt like a job in a sense. But I mean, we never really got tired of going into the studio in that respect. But I think there's different ways we can do it next time. I think next time we'll probably go on with a lot more pre-production and that kind of stuff. I think right now...
Like this recording being our first full production, like just the thing we will take away from this is the learning experience, things that we've learnt that will work the next time we do get to record, and you know, things that we'll just scrap, things that just did not mesh, things that did not help the recording process. But being the first album, it's just a massive learning experience for us, so we seriously can't wait just to write new songs and do it all over again and give you guys a better glimpse of what we're capable of doing.
So if I had to ask each of you what was your favourite track on the album, what would be your favourite track?
Personally, I think for me, and it might be a little bit of a disagreement between the rest of the band, but for me, the last track on the album, Burning Bridges, is our best dynamic track of the whole album. I mean, as Brad put it to me in an email once, it doesn't hit you in the normal way a metal track hits you. It hits you in a different way compared to the rest of the album, and that's why I think it's the best track. I think it's got It was the last track that we wrote, and I think it's of a glimpse of things to come.
To tell you the truth, I actually agree with Simon. Burning Bridges, I do think, is our best achievement. But when it comes to to actually listening to all the tracks on the CD, you can tell which ones would be the more popular ones. I think if these two, if Scott and Brad disagree with me, that's fine. But with Burning Bridges, it was one of our biggest feats. It was an epic song, had so many changes in it, and we are very proud of that song.
We'll be right back.
But when it comes to actually listening to the tracks and the whole favorite thing comes along, I think Psyophobia is probably our best sounding track, and it's the most listenable track. Like, if you...
To
metal listeners and non-metal listeners, I think Psyophobia can relate to a lot of people when it comes to the music and when it comes to the lyrics. As of lyrics, though, my favorite lyrics that I've written is a toss-up between Hide and Seek and Rise. Hide and Seek is the only song on the album that doesn't involve me. It's written about a character that is not me. And Rise is about having writer's block and just going to the Bible and reading the Bible to get some inspiration. And it was one of the best inspirations that I ever had. It was pure anger. I read the Genesis, and the whole Cain and Abel story just pissed me off, and I said, I'm writing a story about that. And that's how Rise came about.
Now it's time to
Personally for me, so speaking of favourite songs, I think this question kind of comes in two parts. So, like, I'll tackle it from, you know, my favourite song to play and favourite song to listen to. I'd have to say that for playing, it would have to be Rise. Just the flow of the song, all the different parts just meshing together, and especially the progressive ending where, like, all the parts just mesh in together so well. Just a really enjoyable song to play. And that's one key point that I kind of stick to is, you know, I realise that these songs I'm going to be playing hundreds of times, so I just want to make it as interesting as possible for myself to play so I don't get bored of it. So that's my favourite song to play. Favourite one to listen to, I'll probably go with Shattered Vial, which is the second last track on the album. Just from, you know, starting out with Brad's massive drum kit, and then it just, from the get-go, it's just in your face, and it really does not stop until the very end. You start out, and you've got this really jumpy riff, kind of laid back and all that type of stuff, but still held together by a really solid rhythm. And then from there, it goes into a really old-school riffage before, you know, thrashing out and all that type of thing. To listen to, it would have to be Shattered Vial. It's just got the kind of aspect of what we're going for the whole band name, The Journey of Metal. And just that one song kind of is that in a sense. It's, and it, you know, from Pantera days back to your Metallica old school Kill 'Em All days and, you know, back again. So that's just what we're striving for.
Yeah.
My favourite song on the album, I'm almost tossing up between two of them, and coincidentally it was two of the songs that were kind of written chronologically after each other. I think, was it Shattered Vial and Burning Bridges were written after each other?
Yes.
Yeah. So Shattered Vial, as Scotty's already mentioned, was this massive drum beat at the start, and then it breaks into some kind of almost thrash kind of beat. And then we finished that off, and then we wrote Burning Bridges, and I came up with this, you know, this massive drum beat for that too. I love playing Burning Bridges. It's a fantastic song. It gets me going. Unfortunately, it's mostly always at the end of the set, so I'm tired as hell. Yeah, but if I was to choose one or the other, I'd probably say Burning Bridges over Shattered Vial.
So my favourite out of the ones that I've played on the podcast so far would probably be Electric Scarf. Tell us a bit about that song.
Surprising you say that, because I think majority of when people that have actually bought the album off us at gigs have actually said that that's their favourite track, which is quite surprising, because, I mean, that track is probably the most fundamentally the most different track on the album, I think, one of them, in the sense that we call it the three-part song. So you've got the, what would you call it, the start of it, more of like a thrash metal song in the middle, and then we kind of go into like a rocky instrumental, and then it kind of comes into a very metal end.
Like new metal.
Yeah, like a new metal end almost. And I was, for me, I was surprised when people, I mean, we've asked a long-time fan of ours, one of our fans, he said that, like, you know, that's his favourite track, and a lot of people said that. They said they really like the thrashy track, and I was so surprised. I'm like, not to say that I don't like the track or anything, but, like, it's, yeah, it was a real, like, because that song took a lot of writing, you know. We chopped and changed, we shortened bits, we lengthened bits in that, until we thought, yeah, that's a good mix, so I'm glad everybody likes it.
Electric Scar is actually about me getting hit by lightning. I used to work in a pub, and I went out the back to go and see if some paper rolls were taking in. It was starting to rain. As I walked out, a lightning bolt hit the beer kegs about 5 metres away from me and blew me back into the actual pub. Woke up from the floor and had this high pitch ringing in my ears, and I couldn't see properly. It was it took a little while to get over. And as I was trying to get over it all, I thought, this will make a good song. So I wrote the lyrics to that, and apparently it's one of our favourites. And when I said before that there was no machines involved in our songs, I tell a lie. This one actually has a lot of sound effects put in place by Tim Musgrave. We worked together and put together the sounds of a storm happening, and worked it out to put the lightning crash, the thunderbolts into the places that were needed.
So Tim actually did the start to rise as well, the kind of heartbeat hospital feel you feel at the start and the end there, he did that too.
Yeah, so there you have it, and that's Electric Scar.
Blessed kings.
And the song that opened the show that I was at, and also the first track on the album, to me sort of reminds me of the Terminator 2 movie. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, when I had my tumours taken out of my throat, I spent 2 weeks on endones and oxycontins, I think they were called, and it was pretty much off my face the entire time I was trying to get over my throat being so sore. And I sat down on a computer and played with sounds and stuff like that. And I'd wake up the next day and find tracks being done, and I couldn't remember doing them. And that was one of them. It was supposed to relate to a foundry, basically. It was like a secret foundry. If you listen to those footsteps, it goes to an elevator, and the elevator goes down a few floors, and you start hearing the sounds of grinders and welders and machines. And all the tools seem to stop doing what they're doing to join into this little bit of a beat, and that sort of merges into the first song on the album, Away From You, which is the drum track that Brad came up with for that.
Awesome. So to finish off, tell us about what you think of the live Sydney scene as you found it, and what do you get out of playing live?
From playing live, you know, playing, I suppose, live music more than any other band now in this band, it's really grown on me that there's actually really a lot of talent out in the local metal scene, more than I probably expected before playing live music. I mean, I bow down to everybody that actually comes out to my shows, you know, like, especially, like, for example, the last show we had last weekend was in Tempe, and, you know, for the amount of people that at least actually came out all that way, because, I mean, we're a Western Sydney band, so we're usually when we play in stuff like Windsor or Blacktown, closer to stuff like that, we expect a little bit more people than we usually get. And yeah, and for those fans to come out and have a good time, that, even though we know most of them anyway, but and other new people to hear music, it's really good to know that people are coming out and seeing live music and not just going out to see, you know, the bands that they listen to and they buy CDs off the charts and that kind of stuff.
I love playing live. I'd rather play live for the rest of my life and have video recordings and DVDs and CDs to getting sold from that than sitting in a recording studio for a year. You don't get the same feeling off the CD that you do when you come and see us live. When we're live, we put on a show, and our show is something that we're all working on at the moment, and we've gotten to where we wanted to be for this time. In a year's time, we're going to have another goal, and we're going to reach that goal, and we know we're going to reach that goal. We have a lot of faith in what we do. And when we see people coming to see us, doesn't matter if it's a small crowd, doesn't matter if it's a big crowd, we always have people coming up to us at the end of the show saying, that was awesome. The last gig we had, we played like crap. And we still had people coming up to tell us saying, well, awesome. So it doesn't matter how hard we try on stage and we turn around and we look at each other and go, geez, we didn't do that well tonight. Other people still think we're amazing. So I think we're doing something right.
Well, you'd have high standards for yourself.
We do, and
I think as a band, that's a pretty good strong suit to have as well.
Yeah, that's right. We do have high standards for ourselves and for each other. Because if one person doesn't pull their weight, we're all there, not picking on him, but pulling him up with us. Like we have to stick together. We are a team. We have to do what we do well. Otherwise, we're not going to have people coming out to see us anymore. And playing in Sydney, I mean, yeah, our friends live around, and being a band at our stature, that's mostly the people that come are friends of ours. And when we actually get fans coming to see us, like, and we've had a few come to see us now that we haven't known before the gigs, and they come back again and again, it shows that we are doing something right.
Yeah, for me, playing live is just, you know, getting out to new ears. Like, I really do feel that we've got it, like, the guys here and myself, we just got a special connection. We do write really good music, and I may be being slightly biased, but my goal in playing live is just getting that out to new ears and just showing the world that, you know, we're here to...
Go on. Rip your head off.
Rip your heads off! Yeah, and I also think it's good to see that, like, with people you don't know asking you to buy CDs and maybe even T-shirts, which is a real honour, and sometimes even coming, you know, out to gigs, and especially...
We actually have a guy that's he's travelling the world at the moment, and he wanted to travel the world in a Foundry Road T-shirt, and he's taken photos in front of a lot of different landmarks and awesome. In famous places, so yeah, that was really cool.
Brought a little chuckle to me. I was like, awesome. That's us. But yeah, I suppose the best thing about playing live is talking to people after shows, and, you know, even if we didn't play the greatest gig and they think it's fantastic, it's good to come away now and have like a warm feeling saying that, you know, at least, you know, someone likes our music, and at least if they buy it, and especially to you two, man, like playing our music on the radio, thank you very much.
Yeah. And just to, you know, put the point a little bit further in us sitting back here and saying not playing the greatest gig and all that type of stuff, don't get too worried. As we were saying earlier, we are our own worst critics. And no matter how good we do play, we do always think we can do better, and we will always bring better. So, you know, come along, see for yourselves, and we guarantee that you'll be blown away.
Playing live, the great Zach Wild from Black Label Society said, "I don't care if I'm playing to 10 people or 10,000 people, I'll put on the same show and I'll play with the same kind of energy." And I think regardless of how many people come to our gigs, we still put on the same kind of show with the same kind of energy, and it doesn't matter how many people are in the room. Basically, we want to reach out to those people and touch them and get them feeling what we're feeling up on the stage. There's a lot of great bands out there. We want to share the stage with them. We want to show them that we're here to make a point. And yeah, that's it.
So what's the future for you guys? Do you think you're going to spread out further in terms of gigs, like outside of Sydney?
We'd love to go down to, I think it's Canberra. Canberra, Melbourne. Earlier this year, I went down to Melbourne and saw my mate's band play at the Espionage on in St Kilda, and that was a fantastic gig. But if we could make it down to, you know, Canberra, Melbourne, go up the coast, go up to Queensland. If we could make it out of the state, that would be fantastic.
Next year is going to be a big year for us. One of our goals is to play interstate by the end of this year. We're not going to reach that goal because of how long recording took. But next year is going to be a very big year for us. We're going to play interstate for sure. So anyone that's listening in Queensland, ACT, Melbourne, Perth, Adelaide.
Serial killer, capital of Australia, South Australia.
South Australia, yeah. All you serial killers out there, you got someone else to face. I tell you, you watch out for me. My name's Explain, and you've got some competition, boys.
I think we're all in agreement now after some discussion that we're probably going to branch out to overseas as well, trying to send our records as far as we can, far and wide around the world as well. It already has started, thanks to Brad, top salesman of Foundry Road.
Chief of sales.
Let me rephrase that. Chief of sales of Foundry Road. Yeah, I think we're trying to branch out because we obviously realise that there's a lot of metal labels and that kind of stuff. There's a huge metal scene in Japan, you know, obviously Sweden, all these different countries around the world where I think that, I mean, I don't know if we're not the only ones doing it. We probably aren't the only ones doing it, but hopefully, you know, we can strike someone's ear there and move on further.
And so, Brad, let's finish with the social networking side. You've been pretty strong in that area, getting your stuff out there.
We've seen a massive uptake in our Facebook page, which obviously means that people that have come to our gig have really enjoyed what we've put on and, you know, that they want to learn more about us and stuff like that. On the other side, the Twitter social networking side of things, I've sent the CD over to California. It's gone to Western Australia. So we're spreading it. We're spreading it that way. Just now I've just learnt that a promoter has added us on Twitter. Thank you to Anthony for that. So that's really cool. Someone's listening to us and they've enjoyed our music and that's all good. So yeah.
Awesome. So this has been a lot of fun. The audience probably hasn't heard half of it, but it's been a lot of fun. So Foundry Road, good luck, guys. Needless to say, we'll keep in touch and see what happens to you guys over the next year or so.
Thank you very much.
If you want a copy of the album, send an email to foundryroad@gmail.com.
Yeah,
the website's store just over there. So
orders@foundryroad.com.
Sales.
Merch.
Yeah.
Just
write
that down.
Organized. Damn.
Couldn't
think
up
another one.
Just merch at Fangio. Buy me.
No, done. You buy now.
At Fangio. Yes.
You buy.
Yes. You buy now.
Explain so you buy.
Or I kill you. You buy now or I kill you at Fangio.
Do it. I want that to be the end.
If you want a copy of our album, The Flood of Isolation, hit us up at merch@foundryroad.com. We'll send you details and that'll be that. Cheers.
And if we want to find out more that we haven't found out, we can go to your website at
www.foundryroad.com.
Easiest way to attain an album of Foundry Road, The Flood of Isolation, is to get your ass to a gig.
Or there'll be a link on the show notes.
G'day, mate. You're listening to Insomnia Radio Australia with music from Down Under.
Are you looking for some great Australian music? Could be country like that. It could be dance. At awesome rock. It could be metal. It could be jazz, who knows? If it's Australian music you're after, there's one place, guaranteed, every song Australian. Insomnia Radio Australia, the best Australian music that you've never heard. Australia.insomniaradio.net. Ow! Well, folks, that was an epic interview, a lot of editing, but a lot of fun. The introduction you heard was by Rich Palmer when he was hosting Amped New Music Weekly, the review podcast of the Association of Music Podcasting, and that was episode 254. You can find out more about the Association of Music Podcasting at musicpodcasting.org. Rich Palmer is also the host of the Audio Gumshoe podcast that you can hear at audiogumshoe.com. The songs that you heard in the order that you heard them during this interview, we had Hide and Seek, Burning Bridges, Rise, Shattered Vial, Electric Scar, and The Weight. Until next week, where we go back to Nayrockvember, I'm Erk on behalf of Foundry Road. Good night, Interweb. You have been listening to a Channel Erk production. Channel Erk and all five podcasts are licensed under a Creative Commons non-commercial, non-derivative, share-alike license registered in Australia. Music is used with direct permission or under agreements with various music providers. All rights to the music contained within remains with the original rights holder. Some sound effects are sourced from the Free Sound Project under Creative Commons. For more information about Channel Erk, go to www.channelerk.com.